This is the CEO Series with Kara Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Kara Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada's and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Mohamed Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and more recently, Eileen Murray, co-CEO of Bridgewater, one of the world's biggest hedge funds out of Connecticut. The show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be in Toronto speaking with David Hopkinson, Global Head of Partnerships for Real Madrid, the incredibly well-known Spanish soccer or football team. David, have you gotten used to saying football yet?
I'm a football guy, yes. It's soccer. It's a dirty word in my household.
Thank you, David, for joining us today. David, tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family do for a living?
I'm a Canadian. I grew up right here in Toronto, down in the beaches. Mom was a paralegal. In fact, a voice stenographer in the court system. My dad started in insurance and ended up as the CEO of a reinsurance intermediary here in Toronto.
Okay, so successful, not so much an entrepreneur, but a successful business person.
Definitely, and someone who didn't have a strong formal education and really got to the top through hard work and hustle.
How do you think they've influenced you looking back? Did you kind of go into business because of what your dad did, or how do you think they influenced you, if at all?
I think my dad did a pretty good job just being a model of success. You know, my early memories of my father, you know, sitting there at the kitchen table with his briefcase open after, you know, we're kind of in our pajamas, and there's dad at the kitchen table with his briefcase open and working on things, and that's what you did to succeed is, you know, work was not something restricted to the office or a straight 9-to-5. Work was what needed to get done.
Back in elementary high school, do you remember what you wanted to do? What was your dream? Did you want to be an astronaut, or what did you want to do at that point?
I had dreams, you know, astronaut and fighter pilot, and I think I wanted to be a superhero at one point, just trying to find a path to that. I really, one of the things that scared me in high school and earlier in elementary school is I had no idea what I wanted to do and was, you know, quite concerned the world was going to eat me up, as a matter of fact. I really had no career plan.
So some of my students worry about, particularly undergraduates, and let me ask this question. What's your passion, David? When did you find it, and has it evolved over time?
Yeah, it has evolved over time. You know, I'm very passionate about what I do. I'm very passionate, and people are like, oh, pro sports. Well, that's a part of it. I am passionate about the pro sports angle. But I'm very passionate about the team that I lead, the people I work with, the industry that I'm in. That really has become a passion. I, of course, did not have that passion until I got into it. I didn't grow up, actually even a big sports fan. It's something I fell in love with because I got very motivated to succeed in the field that I had chosen for myself.
What did you study at university?
Political science and philosophy there at McGill. I enjoyed it. And I'll tell you, I didn't understand at the time how applicable it would be to my career. But now that I've been working for 25 years, I think about things I learned in university, especially you know, politics, philosophy, culture, leadership. I'm working on that stuff every single day.
How do you work on those things every day?
Well, look, you know, politics is about people. And philosophy is about people, and quite frankly, sports is about people. One of the things I have talked with very frequently with my team about is, look, we don't make anything. You know, we're not making processors or construction equipment. You know, really, what we're in the business of making are memories and things that matter to people. We're in the people business, and I think much of what I learned studying politics, studying philosophy was. How to connect with and relate to people. And that's really what sports is about.
So first job out of university, when you finished studying, what was your first job?
My very first job, I was selling door-to-door.
Really?
Yeah.
What were you selling?
Garbage. bad products, golf course discounts, restaurant discounts. I did it for a very, very short period of time. And it was couponing, really. It was just something that anybody with no education and no clear career path could do, which was why I was a perfect candidate for it. And I learned a lot on doorsteps. So that was my first job was in sales, and not because I chose it, but because I just really needed a job.
Is sales relevant as a skill set today, or is it really old school?
Oh, I think it's never been more relevant. I really do. I think that as my career has progressed, as the world has proliferated with options, everybody has an option all the time, trust in the sales process has never been more important. And trust is a differentiator. We don't talk about it very much. Yes, we trust brands,
yeah.
But I think we need to buy things from people that we trust. I say to people, would you ever buy something from somebody you don't trust? No. The answer you get back every single time. Okay, so we need to put trust before the transaction. And I learned a lot about building trust early in my career.
So how do you build trust today when you go call on clients around the world?
I think there's a lot of things you've got to do to build trust. One of which is have a reputation as a trustworthy person.
Okay.
You know, it's very easy, in preparation for today's interview. You did a little bit of research on me.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of research on you.
Sure.
So we understand a little bit
about
one another's reputation. And I think that when we're meeting with professionals anywhere in the world, we can expect that they'll have done a little bit of research on us. We want to have a good and well-managed reputation of somebody that is trustworthy. And then let's see how the conversation evolves. You know, there's conversations in cultures here in North America where trust is loaned very easily, almost extended as the default setting.
Yep.
And what I'm finding in other cultures, that is not the default setting. You need to go and earn that trust, you know? And we understand some of those cultures where you really can't talk about business at all in that first dinner. It's about where you grew up. Tell me about your family. Where are you going in life? And we've got to build those trusting relationships before we can ever introduce a conversation about transaction.
Clearly, you're a leader today. When was your first leadership role?
As a teenager, I was a canoe instructor. Became a canoe tripper and would, you know, be doing these excursions into the wilderness here in northern Ontario. At the time, there was something called the Ontario Camp Leadership Center. I went for 3 weeks to the OCLC at 17 years old and woke up to the potential I might have as a leader. Started to see myself as a leader, started to self-identify as a leader, and it changed the trajectory of my life.
What is leadership in your mind?
The leader's responsible for a bunch of things that a non-leader may not be. A leader ultimately is the one that's going to set the tone for the culture of the organization. However big an organization he or she leads, right? That can be two people, that can be 2,000 people, or in the case of a nation, that can be millions of people. They're going to set the tone. If that, you know, is that tone going to be one that is free of fear, is committed to egalitarianism, it articulates and delivers a clear vision. So there's a bunch of things the leader needs to do that are not about hard skills. They're about very, very soft skills. They're very people-oriented skills. And that's really, for me, the key to leadership.
I work with a guy named Henry Mintzberg, one of the top business profs in the world. One of his favorite sayings is, I'm a human being, not a human resource.
Ah.
Does that resonate with you?
It does. It does. When we talked about trust earlier, you've got to trust your leader. And trust is built through one-on-one personal connections. You know, we've got to have leaders that we can relate to. It doesn't matter how smart somebody is. If you don't trust them, you won't follow them. So I think that, you know, on the great index of would you rather have a leader that's brilliant or a leader that's of enormous high integrity and really trustworthy, I think most people would rather have somebody that they trust and believe in rather than necessarily the brightest guy or a girl in the room.
So you're Canadian, grew up here in Toronto, went to McGill, worked with Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment Partnership for decades. Mm-hmm. How's it different working and leading in Spain than it is here in Toronto? Is it different at all?
Yeah, it is different. And understanding that difference, part of that difference is what attracted me to it, to this opportunity to relocate to Madrid, take my family with me and grow as a business professional. I really enjoyed immensely my career at MLSC. They took me aboard as a part-timer with the Raptors in 1994. I managed to be the chief commercial officer before I left in 2018. So it was an absolutely terrific ride. Those franchises, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Toronto Raptors, Toronto FC, the Toronto Argonauts, those are businesses that are largely regional. Certainly in the case of three of those leagues, the NHL, MLS, the CFL, those are teams and leagues that people care about here in North America. The NBA is a emerging global league, but is still, I would say, largely North American product. One of the things I found very attractive about the opportunity to work in global football is it truly is global. Followers around the world, fans around the world. It really was a step change for me in terms of scale, and that was something I was very, very interested in learning. Not just what Real Madrid meant to Madrid fans, Spanish fans, but really to football fans globally.
We're speaking with David Hopkinson, current global head of partnerships for the Spanish soccer team, Real Madrid, and formerly the chief commercial officer of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment Partnership. Coming up, we'll talk about the evolution of the sports industry. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm in Toronto speaking with David Hopkinson, a fellow Toronto native who's the global head of partnerships for the Spanish soccer team Real Madrid. So David, how did you go from selling tickets to becoming one of the most respected sports executives, not only in North America, but globally? Quite the trajectory. How did you go about doing that?
I don't know. What I will say is it sure didn't happen overnight. I've been in this business 25 years. I think one of the things that I realized early in my career was I'd better deliver, especially I've always been a revenue person. I've always been on that side of the equation. And so there's really no room in that side of the house for stories. You've just got to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
And I think whether that was selling Argos season seats, Raptors season seats as we launched the franchise in 1994, or you know, partnerships and naming rights deals as I ended my career at MLSC, it's been about delivering the goods.
You left the Raptors a year before they went to the World Championship. How did you feel about the Raptors winning? Did you watch any of the games? Did you get involved?
First off, I feel great, and I'm thrilled for them. I didn't nail the timing of my departure. I acknowledge that. But I came back for game five. I flew over just really honestly for the game, and they lost that game. But they closed in game six. It was a little tough to follow because it's a nine-hour time difference.
Yeah, sure.
When they're on the West Coast versus Madrid. But people called me from my former team. They called me from the floor. Really, really meaningful to be a part of that celebration. I'm thrilled for every single one of them.
When you think of the different sports you work with, are there different cultures? You think about hockey versus NBA. Are there different cultures in them?
Very, very. NHL players approach life differently than NBA players and NBA dressing rooms, certainly the ones I've seen. In fact, one of the things that always kind of frustrated me when I was at MLSC is here we've got this portfolio of teams, great clubs, great brands, and I don't think we ever unlocked or certainly in my time there, I don't think we unlocked the potential synergies that maybe what could hockey learn from basketball and vice versa, whether it was athletic therapy, coaching, you know, player relations, you know, CBAs. Couldn't we learn more by sharing? And we didn't do a really wonderful job sharing across that part of the business. And I think it was a missed opportunity. But I'm telling you, the cultural difference was part of the reason.
Well, part of it seems like in the NBA and the NFL, there's much more celebration and a public display of excitement when you score. But in hockey, it seems like there's a bit of a culture of don't make it about you, don't make a big deal about it.
Yeah, you'll get called a peacock, showboat, maybe worse.
Yeah.
Hockey does have a much more sedate culture. You know, we're always fighting about what a celebration should or shouldn't look like. In the NBA, I think it's much more tolerant of, you know, brashness and bigger personalities. And in fact, celebrates a lot of those big personalities, and that becomes part of the story. So you're right. There is a real difference there.
What's the culture of football at Real Madrid, and how's it different than the Leafs or the Raptors in your mind?
Well, there's a lot of similarities, I think, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs are, what are they, 102 years old? Real Madrid's 117 years old. So these are iconic brands, brands that were there at the foundation of the sport, brands that are over 100 years old, brands that represent community and community values. And this is still a hockey country. And all the success the Raptors have had, fantastic. It's a changing culture. It's a changing country. But I still think this is a hockey country, at least today. And so the Maple Leafs sort of represent, you know, the best of those values nationally and culturally. And I think Real Madrid does the same for Spain in so many ways. An iconic brand, a brand that represents the city, the culture, and the values of the society. So I think there's a lot of parallels there.
You're in charge of global partnerships. Yeah. What does that mean?
In modern pro sports, of course, the impact that your corporate partners are going to have financially on the club are incredibly important. And that's, you know, really in any single sport. At Real Madrid, we're blessed to have a very large partnership business. In fact, the biggest part of our overall business is the partnerships. And it's my job to not only preserve that, but to grow that. We've just announced a new partnership, pardon me, an extension of our existing partnership, but 8 more years with Adidas, who, you know, make our gear that we're playing in every single day, making the fan gear as well, an exclusive global license on that. If you look on the front of our shirt, you'll see Fly Emirates, which is our partner there. Audi, our team car, Coca-Cola, I can go right down the list. It's a great list of A brands, and we've got to keep those partners happy, engaged with us, deliver their business objectives, and then find new partners who want to join that fraternity of elite brands.
Do you travel around the world talking to people like Audi and Coke and so on, and trying to understand what they're up to and where they want to go?
I do.
Now, do you present new ideas to them? So do you guys have a team that comes up with new ideas to pitch them?
We do. And it's a team that we, I arrived back there in September. It took me until about February to get that team stood up because, you know, recruiting is hard. I have a strategy group that works with me in Madrid, and their job is to create intelligent programs. With our existing partners, we'll accelerate their business, but also to arm and equip me so that when I go in to see McDonald's, you know, I'm not saying hi, nice to meet you. I'm saying hi, nice to meet you. Hey, we've been thinking about your business. Here's some things we've noticed about your customer and where you're going, our customer, our fan, where we're going. And this is might be an intelligent, you know, way for us to partner together. I think we've got to do some of that thinking for them proactively and give them something to react to instead of just hoping they'll do that work for us.
So when you look at the revenues of Real Madrid, they must sell out every game.
Virtually, not every single match. First off, it's a very, very big barn. It's 80,000 seats. That is very, very large. And then, you know, we are playing multiple matches. You know, one of the things that's difficult for North Americans to understand that, yes, we're playing in Champions League. Simultaneously, we're going to be playing Copa del Rey, which is the King's Cup in Spain. We're going to be simultaneously playing in La Liga, the Spanish National League. So there's some of those matches against smaller teams where we won't fill the entire building, but it is overwhelmingly popular and most matches sell out.
So there's a limit to how many more tickets you can sell. You can sell them at a more expensive price point. But so it seems like what you're doing, though, that Global Partners is a great growth opportunity, has been for years, on the probably a bigger revenue opportunity than just ticket sales.
You know, the overwhelming majority of our fans, our audience, are going to interact with us principally on television.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. And, you know, I don't know when that's going to change. Of course, we talk about mobile every single day and iPads and phones and the mobile experience. But at the end of the day, this is still the TV screen. And whether that signal's coming in on linear cable, over the air, internet, we want to see things on big screens. That's how most people interact with our product, and that hasn't changed. We've only got 80,000 people in the stadium. Now, 80,000 is a big number live, but it's still only 80,000. When you think about, you know, virtually every time that we play FC Barcelona in what's known as El Clásico, our worldwide television audience is going to exceed 500 million. It's going to be 500 million people. You know, for context, that's about 3 times what the Super Bowl does globally. Mm. So, understanding what the experience looks like in stadium and what the experience looks like for the overwhelming majority of our fans, which are on broadcast around the world, understanding how to cater to the needs of those different audiences differently is a huge piece of our strategy.
The U.S. and China are the two biggest economies, but one that are not over as excited about football as much of the world is. What are you doing in terms of the U.S. and China? How are you going forward with those two big markets?
Well, I see the U.S. and China as incredible opportunities for us. I think you're right. They are currently both underdeveloped when it comes to football. There are different challenges. China is emerging as a pro sports consuming culture, changing very, very rapidly, growing as an economy, growing as sports fans. I think China represents an incredible opportunity. Real Madrid has an office in China. I have one of my staff that's living there full-time, moving between Shanghai and Beijing, actively working with existing and prospective partners in China. I think China represents an incredible opportunity. I'm as much or more excited about the U.S. Fewer people, as we know, but incredible economy and home to some of the world's leading brands. And I think that as some of those U.S. brands look to continue to dominate globally and grow globally, we can be a really effective vehicle for them to partner, especially as football or soccer grows in that marketplace. So we're seeing all the enthusiasm around the Women's World Cup and that great story. I think if you look at 2019 right now, the story of the year so far in my mind is their win at the World Cup. MLS and Major League Soccer continues to make major, major inroads, and soccer's growing there. And now we've got the World Cup coming to North America in 2026, which is a long way from now, you know, seven years, but it's also only 7 years from now. So I think that soccer and football is only going to grow in the U.S., and I can't wait to see that.
We're speaking with David Hopkinson, Global Head of Partnerships for Real Madrid. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Cara Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're sitting down today in Toronto with David Hopkinson, Global Head of Partnerships for Real Madrid. He spent, before that, years with the Leafs, the Raptors, and other great Toronto teams. What part is social media playing in terms of your marketing these days? You were involved with a bit here in Toronto. How big is it at Real Madrid?
Well, it's enormous. And to be totally honest with you, that was one of the big opportunities for me as I went there. It's the largest brand in the world. The only exception being Samsung, who pre-installs it on their devices. But this is not sports brand Real Madrid. The largest brand, other than Samsung, is Real Madrid. Number two is FC Barcelona. So it just tells you about the power of global football. For comparative, you know, when I was at the Raptors, yes, we had about 2.5, it's probably gone up from there, about 2.5 million followers on Facebook, for example. Well, Real Madrid's 110 million followers. Wow. So this is, you know, it's not 10 times, it's even greater. We think about social media, digital, all day, every single day, and you cannot have any conversation about partnerships, about marketing at all any longer without talking about, well, what are we gonna do on social?
And it's not just the younger people, but it's people over 45 as well that are on social media now. Like, that's shifted in the last 5 years.
Absolutely. And it doesn't mean we're all on the same platform.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook and some of the demographic challenges Facebook is having are very well understood. There was a reason they went out and bought Instagram. So I think you need to play in different spaces. The big platforms, of course, for us in Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're big there, but you know, we've got to make sure we're on YouTube. We're just doing some experiments right now with TikTok. I mean, this is a very, very dynamic space, and we've got a large team.
We just started a Masters of Management, Masters of Analytics at McGill 2 years ago. How important is data analytics, that whole kind of what baseball looked at from a viewpoint of Real Madrid and football?
From a business standpoint, it's been such a blessing and a curse, you know, all this technology and all this data insight. If I go back earlier in my career, I go back 20 years ago, we weren't selling partnerships, we were selling sponsorships, okay? So we were selling signs and exposure, and there was sort of this assumption that, well, that must work.
Okay.
And of course, if we come now to 20 years later and it's 2019, okay, there's no longer the assumption that it works. Now you need to prove that it works. And so the good news is it does. The good news is that we can demonstrate business lift through a partnership with us. But it means we need to go do the hard work of demonstrating it, which means we need to A/B test everything. We need to, when we design any single program, we need to bake management and measurement into those campaigns. We need to understand what the KPIs are and what levers we can pull to adjust those KPIs. In the partnership side of the sports business, it is more complex and harder than it was 20 years ago, but it also unlocks new opportunities because we now know it works.
Was there any huge surprises as you got into the data?
Let's use that historical analogy again. I go back 20 years ago. Okay, well, we knew it worked, but we couldn't prove that it worked. Well, now we have the ability to prove it works and demonstrate. So again, if I go back to A/B testing, you learn what works in there.
Yeah.
If we start to look at, okay, well, if I run this campaign in this language in this region, what's my impact versus, you know, doing things differently. So I think that one of the things that we're trying to inculcate right now is a culture that is open to experimentation, open to test, open to the occasional failure.
Yeah.
Because you know, you're not going to guess right every single time. So we're getting better and better at this and trying to utilize all these new ways to measure things in real time to get better at how we go to market.
Mm-hmm. Very different than most other teams. What is the ownership of Real Madrid, and have you seen it have any impact in the last year particularly?
So what you're referring to is the fact that we are owned by the 94,000 members of the club, what we call socios. And socios in Spanish means partner. Being community owned is a really high calling and a very high standard. I talked when I was in Toronto working with the Leafs and with the Raptors, I talked often about these are public trusts. And you know they're sort of owned by ownership, but they're really kind of owned by the community. Mm. And I meant that. And with respect to Real Madrid, no, they're really owned by the community. And it does change how we make some decisions versus how we do things in North America. We are really making decisions on what we think our members are going to want. And that is very nuanced, very subtle, something I'm still learning about, but an important distinction.
I read about the mission and the vision that was put together for Real Madrid. Do you see an impact of that mission and vision in terms of what you do as a senior executive?
Yes. So maybe you're referring to The Real Madrid Way by Stephen Mandis.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great book. Lovely man. Very, very bright guy. I've had the pleasure of spending some time with Stephen. And in fact, that book, when I was considering going to Real Madrid, became one of the foundations for my rationale to actually go and join them. Real Madrid's a not-for-profit. And when people hear that, you know, over here in North America, I think they're largely shocked. What that means is that we're very fortunate. In global football, we generate more top-line revenues, more gross revenues than any other club in the world. But we plow all those revenues back into the business to make us better. That shows up on the pitch. That shows up in our organization. Our only purpose here is to win and do good in the world. Yeah. And to demonstrate that we can win the right way. It's about teamwork. It's about integrity. It's about intensity. It's about never giving up. And what we're trying to do is build a culture within the organization that lives those values every single day. Part of our culture is a commitment to excellence. So when I show up in the office, and I'm very fortunate to work, you know, right at the training grounds in a neighborhood just outside of Madrid called Valdebebas. That's where I go to work every day. I've got the pleasure of driving into work every day to a place where our commitment to excellence is obvious.
But it's not just the players who are among the best in the world. It goes down to the secretary, the janitor, every single person is about excellence.
Essentially, yes. And I say it with humility. When I look at my teammates, who we work with, I feel very, very privileged and fortunate to be in that group. You know where it struck me, Carl, is when I toured the facility the first time, the gardening. This is a huge campus, 12 pitches, multiple buildings. It's a big, big, big place. I can't tell you how many acres, but it's big. And it's manicured with an inch of its life because that's the Real Madrid way. And it's those little things that really demonstrate who we are. Our head groundskeeper, Paul, English guy, multiple winner, groundskeeper of the year in the English Premier League. And our chairman just said, look, if that guy's the best in the world, go get him.
Are millennials a bit different in the Generation Z or under 25? Are they a bit different to manage in your experience? Is there anything you're going to have to adjust your style for?
Yes, I think the expectations of a leader have changed over time. I think millennials are just like the rest of us in many, many, many ways. You know, they want to grow, they want to get better, they want an opportunity to learn, they want a career path. What I do see is that they do two things. One, they want to be communicated with in a much more frequent, real time. You know, the idea of annual performance reviews is not going to work for a millennial in my experience. They want real-time feedback, which is great and quite frankly aligns with my values. I don't want to wait a year to talk to somebody about their performance either. I want to have those conversations and be coaching in the moment. So that works very, very well for me. They also want to understand why in a whole different way and will hold leadership accountable to understanding why in a different way, which I also think this is a good thing. You know, I think the yes, sir, how high culture that maybe I had or even you had when we were first growing up in our careers, that looks like it's gone. They want to understand why. But if we tell them why, they see that our actions and our words are aligned, I think they can be incredible work assets.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm in Toronto speaking with David Hopkinson, a fellow Toronto native, who's the global head of partnerships for the Spanish soccer team Real Madrid. Are you an introvert or extrovert?
I don't know. I think I'm a blend of both. I think the overwhelming number of people that meet me would say, oh my gosh, he's an extrovert. You know, the people that are closest to me know that in fact I spend a lot of time alone. I run, I would never join a running group. That's my time to be alone. I'm someone who meditates every day, spend some time in quiet every single day.
So how do you keep in shape? Running, you mentioned. Anything else?
I use a trainer. I've worked with a trainer here when I was here in Toronto for years. I worked with a trainer there in Madrid. I do. For me personally, I lead differently when I'm fit. And it changes how I enter a room. It changes how I conduct myself in conversations. It changes how I see myself and my self-image. So, and I've run this experiment because I was not fit for a few years and took a couple of years off. And for me, I'm a better, more effective leader when I'm fit.
You know, when you talk to law firms, they have lawyers that think they're stars or superstars. We have a couple of genuine superstars at McGill, like Henry. But you actually work with real, genuine superstars. What have you learned about managing egos and the stars? But in your case, absolute stars, no question about it.
Yeah, that's a great question. They're people. And what's very interesting about big stars, very often, they have the most fragile egos.
Mm.
And so, you know, when I think about some of those superstar athletes, I'm thinking about some of my time working with NBA athletes or NHL athletes, you know, they can often be very guarded people, as a matter of fact, because since they were very young, everybody's trying to get in their pocket.
Mm.
And it can make them very, very jaded and very, very cautious and very unwilling to trust. So when I think about when we need to get something out of an athlete or do something with them, or, you know, it's really about, again, building that trust and helping them understand that you're not there just to get something from them. You're trying to do something with them.
Coaches in the are all older by definition, mm-hmm. and probably make less money. So how does a 45-year-old who's not as in good shape, doesn't make as much money, lead a bunch of superstar 20-somethings?
If I go back to something a great NBA coach told me once upon a time, he's like, Hoppy, I'm not teaching these guys how to play basketball. I'm keeping these guys from killing each other. Right?
Yeah.
And at the highest level of sport, whether that's, I think, in our dressing room in global football, I think in the top dressing rooms in the NBA or the NHL, we're not teaching those athletes how to play. They wouldn't be in that room if they weren't phenomenal at it. What we're trying to teach them to do, what those coaches are trying to teach them to do, is work together as teammates. And my CEO is a guy named Jose Angel Sanchez. And he has explained to me that a football club is a small society. And really, who's going to win that match is the best society. The one that cares the most about one another, the ones who trust each other the most, will share, want to win as a group, want to succeed as a group. The best. So it's really about the psychology of the group, of that group. And he thinks that talent is subordinate to that.
How old are your kids?
I have two daughters, 15 and 10.
Is there anything that you've learned that you kind of pass on some way to the girls?
I've always wanted to include my daughters in the things I do. In fact, they both cried when we left MLSC because they just felt that their time at, what was it, at the time, Air Canada Center, had been a part of their childhood and a part of their identity and where they grew up. So exposing them to great athletes, top executives, smart leaders, I think some of that really does come in osmotically in what they will want for themselves. And if they want the right things, I'm very optimistic they will find out the right way to go get the right things. So my daughters are much like me. I wouldn't say that either one of them have a clear plan. And I'm very content with that. The kids that scare me are the 15-year-olds with a clear plan.
Yeah.
A 15-year-old that says, listen, I'm trying to figure this out and figure out what I'm good at, I'm comfortable with that.
I have a wife, two daughters, big job. Have you developed any rules about work-life integration?
I don't think I've nailed this. I don't think I've got that all the way figured out. I do not have, I work every single day. That doesn't mean I work all day every day. But I can't think of a day in the past X number of years that I haven't replied to an email or taken a phone call or does something that is related to the business and to the career that I'm managing here. My family gets that. They understand that, there's jobs that require that, and that there's also some perks and privileges that come with those jobs, and that's just the price of those roles.
We like these days authentic leaders. Mm-hmm. What does it mean in your mind to be an authentic leader?
Let me go back to that part. I'm a really, really big fan of the word alignment. And I had a great conversation, boy, it must have been 10 years ago, with a friend who really, we had a great agreement about the power of being aligned. And aligned is not just business, but it means that the things we say we're going to do, we do. Mm. I can think of cultures that I've worked in or looked at where I can see a misalignment. We say this, we do that. I think that authenticity means, like, the people understand who the leader is, what that leader's about, and sees integrity or alignment between how he or she has conducted himself and what they say. It's not really, really hard, but it requires constant vigilance. And so for me, authentic leadership, you know, requires continual vigilance. Is what I say I'm doing. Is that what I'm doing?
Favorite restaurant in Toronto?
We're at it. Harbor 60, right here on Harbor Street down in.
How about in Madrid? Occasionally, Montreal's get over to Madrid. What's your favorite restaurant? Have you developed one yet?
For it depends what you want. If you want just for wonderful food, Bibo by Danny Garcia, right on Castellano. Oof, fantastic. Beautiful location, great food.
Is your body used to the 10 o'clock dinner time yet?
I think so, yes. I was a late person. I am a late person. I was a late person here in Toronto. In fact, I took my wife to dinner last night, and we showed up at 9:30, and we were meeting another couple, and I think they were just shocked. They'd already eaten. We're used to the 10 o'clock start.
Siestas?
A myth. I don't find, certainly not in Madrid, and it's certainly not in my team, I don't see siestas. We have a long lunch. Lunch starts at 2, it ends at 4, and it's not about sleep, and it's not about laziness or some other, you know, some of these perhaps other negative preconceptions we have of this idea.
Yeah.
It's about socialization. A lot of people go home and spend time with their family 2 to 4. It's really a break during the day. I've really come to embrace that. I will take that 2 to 4 lunch and spend time with people that I want to spend time with in the middle of the day. I like it.
This has been the CEO Series. David, thank you for joining us today. The show is produced by Marie LeBrasse. We also like to thank our technical producer, Brian. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.